Hello, fellow Earth folks. I'm Annie Gigg, GYG, here on CFRU 93.3 FM and CFRU.ca, available wherever you are in the world. Warm welcome to Better Me, Better World, the show for growth-minded change makers, difference makers, and happiness makers. Last episode, I began the series called Finding Life Lessons in the Most Unlikely Places. I'm sharing these School of Life lessons, hoping that my sharing inspires you to look beneath the surface of life, to find lessons to grow on, to foster self-awareness, find meaning and purpose, and facilitate happiness. In the previous episode, I alluded to the first lesson I'm sharing here today, called Lesson in the Picture Puzzle. I am at once a puzzle piece and a puzzle maker. This learning didn't actually come to me while I was working on a picture puzzle. Rather, one morning while walking my dog, Jack, through the back fields beyond the forest, as the sun was making its appearance above the eastern horizon, and as I was contemplating the meaning of life, it dawned on me that the best descriptor of life may be that it is a puzzle. Life is a puzzle. And then the pieces of my thinking started coming together, and the analogy of life as a picture puzzle began to take shape. As we walked across the frozen fields towards the rising sun, I mused aloud to Jack that each of us is at once both a puzzle piece and a puzzle maker. A puzzle piece begins its life not as a separate and distinct piece, but as a part of the seamless whole picture before the picture is cut up into a thousand pieces to become a puzzle. The purpose of the puzzle is for the pieces to be put back together again, to recreate the original picture. I, the puzzle piece, am moved about by me, the puzzle maker, to find my place in the puzzled picture. Initially, as both the puzzle piece and the puzzle maker, I cannot see what part I, the puzzle piece, have in the big picture. I, the puzzle piece, am tried in various potential places until I, the puzzle maker, discover the correct place for me. I know it's the place I'm meant to be when I'm not being forced in. The fit feels just right, and my colors match my surroundings. To my mind, this fitting into the picture represents my relational aspect, my connectivity, my spirituality. I can find the place I'm meant to be only when the other pieces that need to come before me are in place. Once I'm in the right place, I enable the other pieces that come after me to find their places. I, the puzzle piece, become part of the whole, complete picture, and I, the puzzle maker, can see that picture emerging. The picture puzzle could not be completed without both as puzzle piece and the puzzle maker. And for the grand finale of my philosophical walk with Jack, the sun now warm on my back, I pondered the implications of me, the puzzle maker, stepping away, stepping further back from the completed picture puzzle, and seeing that the picture puzzle that I'm in is actually just one puzzle piece of a much larger picture puzzle to be put together. This puzzle lesson begs me to answer the questions. In any aspect of my life, am I attempting to fit myself into a place that's not for me? The wrong career, relationship, religion, friends? Am I able to step back away from myself and view my big picture circumstance so that I can objectively and dispassionately make healthful choices? My next lesson, courtesy of the Mother Nature Department in the School of Life, is Lake Huron, my mentor, my teacher, my counselor. The lake's fluidity taught me of the impermanence of life. I had the great privilege, which I didn't fully appreciate at the time, of growing up on the shores of one of the greatest great lakes, Lake Huron. A solitary person, I found comfort in walking alone along its lake shore in all weather, in all seasons. Just the wind, the water, the land, and me. As long as I can remember, I was fascinated by the interplay between the solid, the sand and rock and clay, and the fluid, the water calm or agitated or raging at the ever-evolving interface. The lake shaped me as much as it shaped its shoreline. From the bottom of my heart, here is my ode of gratitude to Lake Huron. Lake Huron, my mentor, you've shown me that change happens in the dynamic interface between solidly held beliefs built upon a lifetime of experiences and circumstances and fluid thought that comes from the depths of openness and self-awareness. In that meeting zone, I see the continuous interplay, the ongoing reconfiguration of the shoreline. In some places, the waves gouge out, and in other places, the sand builds up. Together, an unending choreography of creation and recreation. Lake Huron, my teacher, your waves have demonstrated to me that there are times in life to push ahead, to energetically reach out towards our goals, and there are also times of pulling back. The pulling back sometimes in life called failure, sometimes called derailment or relapse, is correctly called opportunity to even more powerfully re-energize, revitalize, and realign with our purpose. Lake Huron, my sage counselor, what beautiful wisdom you've shared with me in those times I've dived beneath your surface. On days when you are calm, just below lies a tranquil, peaceful place. As your surface grows more turbulent, it's necessary to dive deeper to reach the quiet and calmness. You've told me that having a go-to place of serenity deep within diminishes the power of the waves, no matter how large they may be. There, in that inner place of peace, I'm beyond their reach to impart fear, anxiety, agitation, and disturbance. Lake Huron's lessons beg me to answer the questions. Do I welcome the inevitable change and growth that result from the interplay between the me I've been conditioned to be and the me I was born to be? Do I graciously accept my failures and use them as opportunities to grow? Have I created that perpetually peaceful place within? Next, lesson in the nursing home. There were residents who lived on the sunny side of the nursing home and others who lived on the dark side. I worked as an aide at the nursing home for only half a year, a job in the hiatus of my career, but it was over the brief span of the experience that the most enduring and transformative life lesson was taught to me. Soon after beginning this work, it became very obvious to me that there were two types of residents in the home. There were those who smiled and laughed and were fun to be around, the ones I came to think of as living on the sunny side of the home. And then there were the others, the frowners and complainers who exuded misery on the dark side of the home. For all intents and purposes, there were no general distinctions between the physical wellness of the residents on either side. Some of the dark side residents received more visitors than the sunny side folks. All were given equal care. But they wore their life experiences very differently. The dark side residents were bitter, angry, depressed, vindictive, and resentful. They arrived at their not-so-golden years clothed in blame and victimhood. Their food was lousy, their care even worse. Their families couldn't be bothered with them. The sunny side residents were pleasant, happy, enthused, engaged, and active. They arrived at their golden years clothed in gratitude and self-empowerment. Although many years have passed between my stint at the home and my sharing of this story, my memory of one particular Sunnyside gentleman remains vivid and indelible. An amputee who had no arms or legs as a result of his service in the Second Great War had an abundance of positive attitude. He had the ability to find the silver lining in every black cloud. When I came to work carrying the weight of my then unhappy world on my shoulders, he soon had me laughing alongside him as I spoon-fed him his dinner. None of the many self-help books, motivational speakers, or personal development training sessions I've invested in over the decades since have so poignantly enlightened me as did this man to understand the power of a positive attitude in determining the quality of my life. Viktor Frankl, psychiatrist and Holocaust survivor, like my mentor at the nursing home, had almost everything taken away from him in the same war, which led to the famous quotes by Frankl. Everything can be taken from a man but one thing, the last of the human freedoms, to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's own way. And when we are no longer able to change a situation, we are challenged to change ourselves. I had no way of knowing the individual life story of each of the residents, but I came to appreciate that happiness isn't determined by the events in the story, but rather by the chosen response to the events. The lesson from the nursing home begs me to answer the question, am I exercising the freedom I have to choose a positive, empowering attitude in any circumstance I find myself in order to live on the sunny side? Next lesson, a dash of red, lesson from the nun. Don't be shy, add a dash of red. That's what the visiting nun teacher said to me as she bent over my school desk, picked up the red crayon, and energetically added bold streaks, seemingly randomly, across my carefully drawn winter scene, realistically colored in shades of grays and browns. There, she noted with satisfaction, that brings it to life. I remember fighting back the tears, staring down at my now ruined drawing. Why did she pick on me? I didn't see her do that to anyone else's artwork. But I had to admit, in a certain way, on a deeper level, my grade 4 self felt special because she had chosen to give me a bit of artistic advice, even if I didn't understand it. I didn't see any red when I looked out the classroom window at the frozen February landscape. A less shy person would have asked the good sister why she had added the color. What was it I wasn't getting? That not getting would nag at me off and on for almost half a century, until I did get it. Until well past middle age, I lived shyly, carefully, safely, reservedly, small, abiding by the rules, coloring inside the lines in my paint-by-number life. The lines where my nature and nurture, my perfectionism, my lack of self-confidence, self-esteem, self-worth, my fears of failure, being wrong, being different, being disliked, making waves, challenging my thinking, disappointing others, stretching my comfort zone. And then suddenly, in the same way artists suddenly become great masters, following a lifetime of dedication to their work, I awoke from my sleep one night, understanding the dash of red. It's my passion, the outcome of aligning my authentic, quirky, unique, imperfect self with my life purpose. That's what Sister was telling me. Be bold. Let my real self show. That's the color of passion, and that's what brings you to life. All the rest is just the canvas with renderings on it. The art lesson from the nun begs me to answer the question, am I boldly, vulnerably living as my real, perfectly imperfect self? Next up, camping lessons. Leave your campsite cleaner than you found it. For anyone who's tent camped, leaving the site cleaner than you found it means you've cleaned away all evidence of your occupation, plus you've gone to the extra effort of removing the evidence left by the previous camper on the site. Unburnt garbage in the fire pit, discarded pieces of rope, overlooked tent pegs, etc. Of course, this adage is a metaphor, challenging us to leave this world a better place than when we came into it. The camping metaphor resonates strongly with me. In my own childhood, throughout the childhood years of my kids, and now as an adult in my golden years, camping has been a regular activity, sometimes multiple times a year. For me, on my own or with family members, camping means a Canadian deep woods experience in a park classified as natural environment or wilderness, typically entailing tenting without electricity, canoeing or kayaking, and hiking. Over many years and many parks, the experiences have become a mosaic of happy memories and a treasure trove of life lessons. Through these lessons, I've come to understand more clearly how to leave this world a better place. First camping lesson from the campsite. It's really quite simple. That's it. The simplicity. More accurately, the natural simplicity of tent camping. Initially, after a camping vacation, I looked forward to returning to the creature comforts of a soft, dry bed and hot, bubbly bath water. But over time, it came to be that taking down camp brought me to tears. I did not want to return to my then unnatural complex world, fraught with commitments, hurriedness, house cleaning, grass cutting, appointments, family schedules, commuting, office work, noise, bills, worries, routine, motorized vehicles, electronics, deadlines, artificial light, electric appliances, sirens, obligations, unresolved issues, shopping. I wanted to stay in the small, simple world of the campsite, a clearing with only my tent, a picnic table, and a fire pit, enclosed by shades of green filtering both the sunlight and the air. I wanted to sleep always with just my thin mattress between my reposing self and Mother Earth, our hearts beating next to each other, a blanket of stars over the campsite, and loons calling across the otherwise silent lakes. I wanted to forever prepare all my meals in one pot on a small flame. I wanted my most arduous decision to remain which hiking trail to take that day or which new book to start. I wanted to continue to have only the sun as my timepiece and my night vision restricted to the dancing circle of warm light around the campfire. I wanted to stay amongst my embracing neighbors, the rocks, trees, water, sky, and their place-sharing inhabitants. But stay, I could not. I came to learn the importance of taking the campsite, the simplicity and oneness with nature, with me wherever I go. Letting go of extraneous, redundant materialism, considerations, thoughts, and behaviors simplifies my existence. Deeply appreciating a walk in the sunlight, a sit-down beneath a tree, or a ski across pure white fields keeps me mentally, emotionally, and physically connected to that bigger whole of which I'm naturally a part. By taking this with me, I'm able to invite others in to share the warm fire in the heart of my simple campsite. Second camping lesson from the hiking trail. At the campsite, typically my hiking companions and I consider the merits of the various hiking trails in the park, their length, difficulty rating, and features. What's the weather forecast for the day? Will it be a good day for views from lookouts? Do we want to do the easy 3-kilometer bog boardwalk first to maybe see a breakfasting moose? Then the difficult 10-kilometer hike up to the highest point in the park? Or do we want to do the 22-kilometer hardwood forest trail around the lake? Almost always, the more difficult the trail is rated, the more experientially rewarding it is. The shorter, easier trails skirting the campground were low-intensity walks for before dinner. After the decision-making came the preparation. A boardwalk wouldn't necessitate serious hiking footwear. An easy-to-carry bottle of water would suffice for nourishment. A 10K hike up and down the side of a mountain or a 22K along a rocky shoreline required more considered planning. The challenge was to ensure there was just enough high-calorie, lightweight food and fresh water in the knapsack, but not any more that would unnecessarily increase the burden. Hiking boots a must. What about an extra pair of socks? Band-aids for blisters? Is the trail guide in the knapsack? The sunscreen? Do we have our sunglasses? Do we want to bring rain gear? No matter how well prepared, we still need it to be okay with the possibility of encountering the unexpected. And encounter the unexpected, my adult son and I, then at the age of 56, did on a 15K loop trail rated difficult in Gros Morne Park in Newfoundland, Canada. Appropriately outfitted for the terrain and weather, at mid-afternoon we judged we'd have sufficient time, 6 hours being the minimum suggested time allotment in the guide, to get back to our car before dark. At one point, about 3 hours into the spectacular hike, we lost our shoreline ridge trail high above the Atlantic and found ourselves on all fours climbing steep cliffs above ocean waves crashing on rocks below, the very same cliffs the trail guide described as dangerous and warned hikers to stay clear of. We were determined, however, to proceed in the general direction that we knew the trail was heading, confident we'd get back on track again. I didn't look behind or below me in the direction of the angry ocean, focusing only on the relative safety of the treed ledge ahead and above that we were targeting. I was adamant I wouldn't attempt to go back down the way we came up. Sometime later, after following small animal tracks through forest, sliding into ravines and crawling beneath branches, grins replaced the growing concern expressing itself on our faces as our eyes lighted on the trail. About an hour after we regained the trail, we encountered a greater unexpected obstacle. It was what we learned later is referred to in the trail guide as the brook you must ford in order to complete the loop trail. After days of torrential downpour, the so-called brook appeared to us to be a raging boulder-strewn river. Do not attempt to cross it when the currents are strong, the guide noted in bold text. We had no choice. We had lost a significant amount of time wandering off trail earlier, and now dusk was beginning to fall. We'd figured we'd still have at least a couple of more hours of walking through forest to complete the loop. To go back the way we came would take at least 4 hours. Once again, I had to move forward in spite of my fear of being washed down the river and out to sea. My son, highly motivated to stay erect, led the way across the torrent, holding his camera containing 2 weeks of vacation pictures well above the frothing water. I waded into the waist-high, cold mountain waters behind him, inching ahead between boulders, feeling about the riverbed for firm footing, and again, keeping focused on the trail sign on the far side of the river. I probably should have felt bone-chilled when I set foot on the riverbank, but adrenaline masked the cold. We crossed without incident. By the faintest of residual twilight in the forest, we cautiously yet urgently navigated our way along the trail over rocks and around gullies to finally emerge from the trees in the full darkness of night. It was a relatively short and easy hike across the open barrens and back to the highway that would take us the last few kilometers to the car park. Shortly after setting foot on the welcome flatness of the asphalt, a car's headlights from behind illuminated our bedraggled figures. The driver stopped to offer a lift back to our car. Despite being barely able to shuffle one foot in front of another, I was inclined to not accept, not wanting to soil the kind stranger's car as we were drenched and muddied. Thankfully, my son hurriedly accepted the gracious invitation of the traveling agent, angel. It took all my remaining energy to climb into the car. Aching in every fiber of my body, I was unable to eat or sleep that night, but I felt immensely rewarded in meeting the unexpected challenges. I was reminded that it's within the greatest challenges that the greatest opportunities for learning arise. Some years before this adventure, I'd likened hiking to life, capturing my thought in adages. Some of them are: on your life journey, don't unnecessarily carry around redundant weight in the form of limiting self-beliefs and unhealthy behaviors. Know that life's rewards are directly proportional to the effort we invest. The higher we go on our self-awareness journey, the more expansive the view and the clearer the understanding of our place as part of the whole. A mistake is only a stumbling block until we use it as a stepping stone. Stop right now to remove the pebble from your shoe, heart, or mind. Wherever we are presently at is the perfect starting place. This exhilarating experience expanded my metaphor beyond these analogies. The intense sensory inputs indelibly wrote the following reminders on my psyche. Our real life trail guide is our life purpose, our reason for being. At times, we lose our way. Keep moving in alignment with our life purpose, and we will regain our path. When encountering challenges, keep focused on our desired outcome, not where we're afraid of going. Look ahead, not back. Trust that we have reserves we're not even aware of to see us through the challenges. Never be too proud to accept assistance. The third and final camping lesson from the canoe. As one goes through life, one learns that if you don't paddle your own canoe, you don't move. Katharine Hepburn. It was a sunny morning in August in the Northern Ontario Wilderness Park in which my adult daughter and I were camping. Clear blue skies reflected in the mirror calm lake, a perfect day for a canoe trip. We registered our trip at the park office, loaded our knapsack containing our water, lunch, and snacks into the canoe, dropped in the emergency bucket, and settled ourselves onto the woven seats, much more comfortable than the aluminum ones. We rented the lightest canoe available as we had 3 portages to make on our circuit of lakes. Shortly into our paddle, we became aware that a tornado from a couple of years earlier had wreaked havoc with the section of the park we were canoeing through. Trees were scattered like pickup sticks. The usual bright orange portage route marker signs, normally easily detected by canoeists, were nailed to trees now submerged. Once we were able to find them, our portage trails were obliterated by debris, so that we were uncertain as to whether we were on the right path, feeling quite lost at times. We ventured on through, neither of us prepared to admit defeat. Making light of our circumstances, we told ourselves this would become a shared memory to laugh over. Little did we know, our most lasting memory bite was yet to be created. We paddled into the vicinity of where we thought, from our map, that our final portage would start. We aimed our canoe towards the shore, where we judged the portage sign should have been. As we made our way into the reedy bay, the water became shallow, then murky, then sludgy, then a viscous brown goo. No problem. It'll be yucky, but probably easy enough to walk the canoe the last 20 meters or so to the shore. Testing the depth of the goo with a paddle, we were alarmed to see the paddle push down with almost no resistance through the muck as far as my arm could reach down into the yuck without touching any solid bottom. We could not walk the canoe to shore. We could not paddle ahead or back. We were stuck in the muck. We thought about the whistle in the emergency bucket, but realized we were too deep into the wilderness for anyone to hear. We hadn't seen any other canoeists in the last couple of lakes. There was definitely no one on shore to throw us a rope and winch us in. There'd be no reason for anyone to come looking for us for perhaps days. I remember feeling anxious only for a fleeting moment. The blink of anxiety was very quickly displaced when I made a decision in that moment to look at this situation as a challenge and try to imagine what the solution would end up being. I did not give a single thought to the possibility of no solution. We could neither walk nor swim to shore, and the traditional method of paddling while sitting or kneeling in the canoe was not an option, and our paddles couldn't be used as poles because we couldn't touch bottom. And then the aha. We stuck upon the idea of kind of standing like gondoliers, balancing carefully while standing up, pushing our paddles against the sludge in unison, one on either side of the canoe, and jerking our canoe ahead with our synchronized forward body pitches. We did advance towards shore, inch by jerky inch, without tipping. Some unmeasurable while later, we stepped out onto firm ground. With a great sense of accomplishment and gratitude, we carried on along our final portage. In the crossing of one last lake to complete the loop back to the campground, all our earlier efforts were rewarded. There at the water's edge was a large cat, a lynx or perhaps a cougar, almost totally camouflaged by the foliage. The mysterious, beautiful creature had come down to the shore for a drink. It caught sight of us, and eyes never leaving us untrustworthy humans in our canoe a few feet out on the water, it warily, slowly slunk back into the trees along the shore, vanishing into the shadows. Rising above victimhood by problem-solving results in beautiful rewards. The lessons from my many camping, hiking, and canoeing experiences beg me to ask the questions, am I living simply and mindfully, appreciating my place in nature? Am I eliminating the weight of my mental and emotional redundancies I carry in order to devote my energy to converting challenges into opportunities along the way? Am I refusing to remain a victim of circumstances? And those questions bring us to the end of this episode. I invite you to tune into the next episode of Better Me, Better World for more of Finding Life Lessons in the Most Unlikely Places. I'll be back same time next week, same place here at CFRU 93.3 FM or CFRU.ca. The shows are recorded, so alternatively, have a listen when it works best for you. Until next time, be you. I'm Annie Gigg.